This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, read by actor James Mason. It is a vivid story of friendship and sacrifice set during the French Revolution.
Nothing that we do is done in vain. I believe with all my soul that we shall see the triumph. But even if not, even if I knew certainly not, show me the neck of an aristocrat and tyrant, and I still would. Then madam, with her teeth set, tied a very terrible knot indeed. Hold, cried Defarge, reddening a little, as if he felt charged with cowardice. I too, my dear, will stop at nothing. Yes, but it is your weakness, and you sometimes need to see your victim and your opportunity to sustain you. Sustain yourself without that. When the time comes, let loose a tiger and a devil, but wait for the time with the tiger and the devil chained, not shown, yet always ready. A figure entering at the door threw a shadow on Madame Defarge, which she felt to be a new one. She laid down her knitting and began to pin the rose in her headdress before she looked at the figure. It was curious. The moment Madame Defarge took up the rose, the customers ceased talking and began gradually to drop out of the wine shop. "Good day, madam," said the newcomer. "Good day, monsieur." She said it aloud, but added to herself as she resumed her knitting, "Ha, good day. Age about 40, height about 5'9", black hair, generally rather handsome visage, complexion dark, eyes dark, thin, long and sallow face, aquiline nose, but not straight, having a peculiar inclination toward the left cheek, which imparts a sinister impression. Good day, one and all. Have the goodness to give me a little glass of old cognac and a mouthful of cool, fresh water, madam." Madame complied with a polite air. "Marvellous cognac this, madam." It was the first time it had ever been so complimented, and Madame Defarge knew enough of its antecedents to know better. She said, however, that the cognac was flattered, and took up her knitting. The visitor watched her fingers for a few moments, and took the opportunity of observing the place in general. "You knit with great skill, madam."
"I am accustomed to it."
"A pretty pattern, too."
"You think so," said Madame, looking at him with a smile.
"Decidedly. May one ask what it is for?"
"Pastime," said Madame, looking at him with a smile, while her fingers moved nimbly.
"Not for use?"
"That depends. I may find a use for it one day. If I do, well," said Madame, drawing a breath and nodding her head with a stern kind of coquetry, "I'll use it."
The spy, who was there to pick up any crumbs he could find or make, did not allow his baffled state to express itself in his sinister face, but stood with an air of gossiping gallantry, leaning his elbow on Madame Defarge's little counter and occasionally sipping his cognac.
"Here is my husband," said Madame Defarge.
As the keeper of the wine shop entered at the door, the spy saluted him by touching his hat and saying with an engaging smile, "Good day, Jacques." Defarge stopped short and stared at him. "Good day, Jacques," the spy repeated, with not quite so much confidence or quite so easy a smile under the stare. "You deceive yourself, monsieur," returned the keeper of the wine shop. "You mistake me for another. That is not my name. I am Ernest Defarge." "It is all the same," said the spy, airily but discomforted too. "Good day." "Good day," answered Defarge, dryly. "The pleasure of conversing with you, Monsieur Defarge, recalls to me," pursued the spy, "that I have the honor of cherishing some interesting associations with your name."
"Indeed," said Defarge, with much indifference.
"I have known Dr. Manette and his daughter in England."
"Yes."
"You don't hear much about them now," said the spy.
"No."
"In effect," Madame struck in, looking up from her work and her little song, "we never hear about them. We received the news of their safe arrival, and perhaps another letter, or perhaps two, but since then they have gradually taken their road in life, we ours. and we have held no correspondence.
Perfectly so, madam, replied the spy. She is going to be married. Going?
Echoed madam. She was pretty enough to have been married long ago. You English are cold, it seems to me.
Oh, you know I am English.
I perceive your tongue is, returned madam.
And what the tongue is, I suppose the man is.
He did not take the identification as a compliment, but he made the best of it and turned it off with a laugh. After sipping his cognac to the end, he added, Yes, Miss Manette is going to be married, but not to an Englishman, to one who, like herself, is French by birth. And speaking of Gaspar, poor Gaspar, it was cruel, cruel. It is a curious thing that she is going to marry the nephew of Monsieur the Marquis, for whom Gaspar was exalted to that height of so many feet, in other words, the present Marquis. But he lives unknown in England. He is no Marquis there. He is Mr. Charles Darnay. Dolnay is the name of his mother's family. Madame Defarge knitted steadily, but the intelligence had a palpable effect upon her husband. Do what he would, behind the little counter, as to the striking of a light and the lighting of his pipe, he was troubled, and his hand was not trustworthy. The spy would have been no spy if he had failed to see it or to record it in his mind. Having made at least this one hit, whatever it might prove to be worth, and no customers coming in to help him to any other, the spy paid for what he had drunk and took his leave. Can it be true, said Defarge in a low voice, looking down at his wife as he stood smoking with his hand on the back of her chair, what he has said of Mademoiselle Manette?
As he has said it, returned Madame, lifting her eyebrows a little, it is probably false. But it may be true.
If it is, Defarge began and stopped.
If it is, repeated his wife.
And if it does come while we live to see it triumph, I hope for her sake destiny will keep her husband out of France.
Her husband's destiny, said Madame Defarge, with her usual composure, will take him where he is to go and will lead him to the end that is to end him. That is all I know.
But it is very strange. Now, at least, it is not very strange, said Defarge, rather pleading with his wife to induce her to admit it, that, after all our sympathy for Monsieur her father and herself, her husband's name should be proscribed under your hand at this moment by the side of that infernal dog who has just left us.
Stranger things than that will happen when it does come, answered Madame. I have them both here, of a certainty, and they are both here for their merits. That is enough.
She rolled up her knitting when she had said those words. In the evening, at which season of all others, Saint-Antoine turned himself inside out and sat on doorsteps and window ledges and came to the corners of vile streets and courts for a breath of air, Madame Defarge, with her work in her hand, was accustomed to pass from place to place and from group to group, a missionary. There were many like her, such as the world will do well never to breed again. All the women knitted. They knitted worthless things. But the mechanical work was a mechanical substitute for eating and drinking. The hands moved for the jaws and the digestive apparatus. If the bony fingers had been still, the stomachs would have been more famine-pinched. But as the fingers went, the eyes went, and the thoughts. And as Madame Defarge moved on from group to group, all three went quicker and fiercer among every little knot of women that she had spoken with and left behind. Her husband smoked at his door, looking after her with admiration. A great woman, said he. A strong woman. A grand woman. A frightfully grand woman. Darkness closed around. And then came the ringing of church bells and the distant beating of the military drums in the palace courtyard as the women sat knitting, knitting. Darkness encompassed them. Another darkness was closing in as surely when the church bells, then ringing pleasantly in many an airy steeple over France, should be melted into thunder cannon, when the military drums should be beating to drown a wretched voice, that night all potent as the voice of power and plenty,
freedom and life. So much was closing in about the women who sat knitting, that they, their very selves, were closing in around a structure yet unbuilt, where they were to sit, knitting, counting dropping heads.
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet.